Marshal Zeke Chambliss came to the McNally house the next morning. The lawman's left shoulder was heavily bandaged, and that arm was in a sling. He had a bandage around his head as well, but he seemed fairly strong.
"Kid, I just wanted to thank you for what you did last night. For all you knew, when you braced those two hellions, they really had killed me."
"I'm glad they didn't."
"Oh, so am I. Anyway, another reason I'm here is to make you a proposition. How'd you like to pin on the marshal's badge while I'm healing up?"
"Wait a minute, Zeke. Mr. Morgan's not yet fully recuperated from his own wound."
"I thought you said when you changed the bandage this morning that the bullet hole looked like it was almost completely healed."
"Almost. I said almost completely healed."
"You said that after today, you didn't think I need to wear the bandage anymore."
You shouldn't use a man's own words against him."
"It doesn't matter."
Morgan turned back to Chambliss.
"Sorry, Marshal. I appreciate the offer, but I have to say no. I'm not cut out to be a lawman."
"Are you sure, kid? I'm thinking that with the famous gunfighter wearing the badge, troublemakers will steer clear of Sawtooth."
"I've got business of my own elsewhere as soon as I'm fit to ride. And that's not going to be very long. I reckon your deputies will have to hold down the fort until you're better."
"Well, we'll muddle through, I guess. If you change your mind, though..."
"No chance."
"In that case, I wish you good luck and say so long."
Morgan had noticed that Eve wouldn't meet his gaze this morning. When the marshal was gone, he waited until he got a chance to speak to her alone.
"What's bothering you, Eve? Did I do something wrong?"
She shook her head, but again, she wouldn't look at him.
"No, of course not. You saved us from those two gunmen. There's no telling what they might have done if not for you, Mr. Morgan."
"Well, that's what I thought. But you seem like you're angry with me."
"I don't know what you're talking about. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have work to do."
Morgan could only stare after her as she bustled off to prepare her father's examination room for the day's patients. Giving up any attempt to figure her out as a bad job, he stepped out onto the porch instead and looked down the road toward downtown. Sawtooth really wasn't a very big settlement, but this was his first good look at it. The road entered the town from the south. Dr. McNally's house was on the edge of the settlement. To the north, the road turned into a broad main street with businesses lining it for several blocks. Most of the residences were on the cross streets. The town was located in a valley between a line of wooded hills to the east and a range of more rugged mountains to the west. The mines were located in those mountains, Morgan knew, while beyond the eastern hills sprawled a vast plain cut up into large ranches. Sawtooth Creek twisted out of the mountains about a mile south of the settlement and provided water for those ranches. Farther to the east lay the mostly arid Humboldt Basin, which wasn't good for much of anything, but this area around Sawtooth was nice country. A man could be happy here, Morgan thought as he leaned on the porch railing, especially if he had a woman like Eve McNally at his side. He stiffened in surprise. Where had that come from? He had no feelings for Eve other than gratitude. He wasn't capable of anything else right now, and suspected that he never would be again. But that didn't stop him from recognizing that some other young man would be lucky to have Eve fall in love with him. He hoped like hell that she hadn't fallen for him. He went back inside and got his hat. As he settled it on his head, he paused to look into the mirror on the wall of his room. He hadn't really paid that much attention to the way he looked since he'd been here. He'd lost weight. His face was thinner than it had been before. Not surprisingly, his eyes had a solemn, almost haunted look to them. Eve had shaved him several times, but he thought that maybe he ought to let his beard grow. That would be one more thing to separate him from the clean-shaven Conrad Browning.
"Where are you going?"
Dr. McNally walked into the front room.
"I just want to get out and move around a little. I don't mean to sound ungrateful, Doc, but I've been cooped up here for long enough that I'm getting restless."
"I'm not so old that I don't remember that feeling, son. You go right ahead. Just don't overexert yourself. You remember, you don't have all your strength back yet."
Morgan left the house and walked down the road into the main part of the settlement. As he did, people on the street saw him and gave him friendly nods. Word had gotten around about what had happened with Garrity and Jessup. But for that very reason, other citizens seemed leery of him, looking at him from the corners of their eyes and even crossing the street so they wouldn't have to greet him. They believed he was a famous gunfighter, Morgan realized, so they were afraid of him. He had never really thought about it before, but now he realized that was the sort of thing his father had been forced to put up with for years and years, being admired and feared at the same time. The blood on a man's hands was mighty hard to wash off. Morgan didn't spend much time in town. He had nothing in common with these people. When he walked back to the McNally house, he found Philip Bearpaw sitting on one of the rocking chairs on the front porch.
How are you feeling this morning?
All right, I suppose.
No lingering effects from that shootout last night, either physical or...
If you're asking if I lost any sleep over killing those two, the answer is no. I gave them a chance to ride away. It was their decision to go for their guns. But I don't take any real pleasure in killing them, any more than I would have if they'd been a couple of rabid skunks. It was just something that needed doing.
That's a good attitude to take, I guess. It's the sort of thing that Preacher or Smoke Jensen would say. Don't look for trouble, but don't back down from it when it finds you. Don't brood about it, either.
Waste of time, as far as I'm concerned.
You feel like taking a ride?
Actually, I do. And I'll bet my horse is even more anxious to stretch his legs. Where are we going?
I thought we'd go out to my cabin. It's far enough away from town that the sound of gunshots shouldn't bother anybody. I picked up a box of cartridges at Ned's store. There's no time like the present to get started on that practice.
They walked around to the back of the house. Bearpaw's horse, a shaggy Appaloosa, was tied up at the shed where Morgan's buckskin and Dr. McNally's buggy horse were housed. Morgan was about to pick up the saddle for his horse, but Bearpaw stopped him.
Let me do that. If Patrick were to see you doing something like lifting a saddle, he wouldn't be happy. And Eve would be positively livid if you were risking opening up that wound again.
Morgan hesitated, then agreed. He didn't like having somebody taking care of a chore he could handle himself. Just another example of how much he had changed since he was a young man. But he knew Bearpaw was right. Eve must have heard them talking, because she appeared at the back door, looked at them for a second as Bearpaw saddled Morgan's horse, then came outside and strode toward them.
Where do you think you're going, Mr. Morgan?
Out to Philip's cabin. He asked me to visit.
Did you ask my father if it was all right for you to ride?
Well, no, I didn't. But it's not far.
Only about a mile. And we'll take it slow and easy, won't we, kid?
Morgan saw something flicker in Eve's eyes when Bearpaw called him kid.
If you tear that wound open, you'll lose all the progress you've made since you've been here.
I know that. That's why I intend to be mighty careful.
All right. Go ahead. Just don't say I didn't tell you it was a mistake.
Carefully, Morgan put his left foot up in the stirrup and swung up onto the buckskin's back. It felt good to settle into the saddle. He smiled down at Eve.
So far, so good. That didn't hurt at all.
Eve turned to walk back to the house. Bearpaw mounted up as well, and the two men rode slowly away from the house, following the trail to the south.
You know, you never did tell me why Eve's so upset with me. I tried to convince myself it was just my imagination, but that's obviously not the case.
It's not really my place to talk about Eve's feelings. You should ask her yourself.
I did. She insists that everything's fine.
It's her decision what she does or doesn't want to tell you.
Yeah, I reckon you're right.
That didn't mean he had to like it, though. They reached Bearpaw's home, which was a sturdy-looking log cabin, a short time later. Morgan frowned at it.
What were you expecting, a wiki-up or a teepee?
I thought the only Indians who lived in houses were the Cherokee and tribes like that back east.
I happen to like an actual roof over my head. A good solid wall between me and the cold wind in the winter. Plus, I need better light to read by than a campfire. These eyes of mine aren't as young as they used to be.
You're not like any other Indians I've run into.
I never met a gunfighter with a Boston accent either. Although the accent does seem to be fading a little. You may never sound like a real Westerner, though.
I'd better learn how to act like one.
Amen to that.
Bearpaw turned his horse.
Come on. Let's go over by the creek.
They rode along the stream in which Morgan had almost drowned until they came to a large open field bordered by a rocky bluff 20 feet high. Bearpaw reined in and dismounted. Morgan did the same. They tied their horses to a couple of saplings. Then Bearpaw pointed to a large pine tree about 20 feet away at the base of the bluff.
Draw and fire at that tree. Hit it as many times as you can.
Morgan faced the pine and reached for the Colt. He emptied all five rounds at the tree.
Do you see any marks on that tree?
No.
How about on the bluff right behind it?
I see five places where the bullets hit the bluff. I missed with every shot.
And that tree wasn't even shooting back at you like Garrity and Jessup were. You see? I told you you were lucky.
You were right. So what did I do wrong?
You didn't listen. I told you to draw and fire at the tree. I didn't tell you to do it fast. Reload and let's try it again.
This time, Morgan understood what he was supposed to do. He holstered the revolver, faced the tree. He didn't waste any time about it, but he didn't rush either, as he lifted the gun and took careful aim at the pine. This time, chunks of bark and splinters flew in the air as the bullets chewed into the tree. Only one round missed and thudded into the bluff behind the pine.
That's more like it.
But way too slow to beat anybody to the draw.
What if the man you're facing is faster than you but a terrible shot? If he gets off three rounds and misses with all of them, and you just fire one but hit your target, you're gonna win.
And what happens if I face somebody who's faster than me and just as accurate?
Oh, well, in that case, you'll die.
Morgan couldn't help but laugh. He shucked the empties from the Colt and started reloading.
I'm going to try again.
Of course you are. I didn't expect anything less from you.
For the next hour, the two men stood beside the creek while Morgan practiced, pausing from time to time to let their ears have a break from the roar of gunshots. Morgan concentrated on hitting the tree, but even so, his draw became faster and smoother the more he repeated it.
All right, I think we burned enough powder for one day.
Morgan felt like he'd made some real progress. It was just a start, of course, but still, he was pleased. He was glad to stop, though, because his arm was getting tired. Drawing and firing a Colt 45 took quite a bit of effort. Morgan reloaded for the final time.
Those arm muscles are probably going to be sore tomorrow.
I can put up with it.
How about your side? Any pain from that wound?
It aches. Not so much that I can't stand it, though. I'm more interested in knowing how you thought I did today.
Like I said, you have a considerable amount of natural talent. I didn't see anything today to make me doubt that.
How long do you think it'll be before I'm ready to tackle Laswell and the others?
Now, that I couldn't tell you. You're not ready yet, I know that.
You'll tell me when I am?
Sure, kid.
Morgan wasn't sure whether to believe him. He wondered if Bearpaw would keep on insisting that he wasn't ready yet in an effort to keep him safe. If that was the case, it wasn't going to work. His shattered soul was still crying out for vengeance, and he could deny it for only so long before he had to answer its call. Dr. McNally was waiting for them when they got back that afternoon.
I don't know if gallivanting around all over the country is good for you and your condition, son.
We just rode down to Bearpaw's cabin. I told Eve that's where we were going.
How's your side?
It's fine. A little achy, but not bad.
You youngsters are just too restless for your own good. All I can do is tell you to be careful, and that I'm not going to be very happy with you if you undo all the hard work Eve and I had to put in to get you healed up as much as you are.
I'll be careful.
Over the next 2 weeks, Morgan rode down to Bearpaw's cabin every day to practice with the Colt. Eve still seemed bothered by having him around, so he thought it was better to get away from the place for a while each day. Sometimes Bearpaw came to the McNally house to get him. Other times, Morgan just showed up at the Paiute's cabin, ready to do some shooting. Nor was Bearpaw content to just help Morgan with the Colt. He wanted to see how the young man handled a Winchester, too. Morgan's sure eye and steady hand made him an excellent shot with the rifle. One day, Bearpaw handed Morgan his old Sharps.
Try this buffalo gun. It's got a mighty powerful kick, though, so be ready for it.
I can handle it.
Morgan took the rifle.
You're gonna need something farther away than a tree to shoot at. A Sharps like that has quite a range. I've heard stories about how one of your people once used the Sharps to knock one of my people off his horse at a distance of about a mile down in the Texas Panhandle.
Bearpaw squinted across the field and then pointed.
See that white blaze on that pond yonder? Where the bark's been peeled off? It's only about 200 yards away, so I'm sure you can hit something that close.
Close? I can barely see it, let alone hit it.
What happened to that confidence of yours? Give it a try. You might want to find a branch or something to rest the barrel on first, though. A Sharps is pretty heavy.
Morgan found a branch low enough on one of the pines to support the rifle barrel while he drew a bead on the distant target. He eared the Sharps hammer back, as Bearpaw instructed him, lined up the sights, and gently squeezed the trigger. What felt like the kick of a mule slammed against his shoulder and knocked him back a couple of steps.
Son of a...
I told you it had a hell of a kick. I saw the wood fly on that tree, though. Not bark. Wood.
You mean I hit the mark?
You sure did.
Morgan felt a surge of pride. The marksmanship by itself meant nothing to him, but it was important because it might someday help him in his quest to avenge Rebel's death.
A Winchester is a mighty fine gun, but when you need to make a long-range shot, nothing is better than a Sharps. You might want to think about getting one.
I'll do that. Can I try again with this one?
If you think your shoulder can stand it. Here, let me show you how to reload.
Late that afternoon, Morgan headed back to Sawtooth. The sun had dipped halfway behind the mountains to the west when he reached the McNally house. He started around the house, intending to put the buckskin in the shed and tend to the horse, when a rider moved out of some nearby trees.
Morgan! Kid Morgan!
That's right.
Morgan reined in. A bad feeling caused his muscles to tense.
What can I do for you?
My name is Duke Garrity. And that was my little brother you killed a couple of weeks ago. So you can feel your hand, you bastard, because you're about to die!
Garrity didn't give Morgan a chance to explain, or even to say a single word. He just reached for his gun, his hand moving to the Colt on his hip with blinding speed. Morgan knew his life hung by a slender thread. Impulse cried out for him to rush his own draw, but the lessons hammered into his head by Philip Bearpaw counteracted that urge. Even though he drew fast, he stayed under control. Garrity's gun roared first, but Morgan's blasted a fraction of a second behind it, the shots coming so close together that they were barely distinguishable from each other. Garrity went backward out of the saddle to land on the ground. His horse moved skittishly away from him. Morgan threw his left leg over the buckskin's back and slid to the ground, coming to rest in a crouch with his gun still trained on Garrity. The man rolled onto his side and reached ahead of him, trying to get his hand on the Colt he had dropped when he toppled off his horse. His fingers fell short of the gun butt. He slumped face first onto the ground. His outstretched fingers twitched a time or two, and then were still. Morgan moved forward and kicked Garrity's gun well out of reach. At that moment, the rear door of the McNally house burst open, and the doctor rushed out, brandishing a shotgun.
What in blazes happened? What were all those shots?
Eve had followed her father out of the house. She stopped behind her father.
That hombre rode out of the trees and threw down on me.
Morgan nodded toward Garrity's body as he replaced the spent shell in the Colt.
He was the older brother of that fella Garrity I had to kill a couple of weeks ago.
Morgan holstered the Colt and moved toward Eve.
It's all right, I'm not hurt.
Without warning, she threw herself at him and started pounding his chest with her fists.
Go away! Go away! Go away! We don't want you here! We don't want your kind around!
Morgan stood there, stunned, not even trying to stop her from hitting him. He knew she had seemed upset ever since the night of that first gunfight, but never in a million years would he have expected a reaction like this from her. After a moment, Eve's fury seemed to have run out of steam. She stumbled back a step, raised her trembling hands, and covered her face with them.
Please, just go away.
McNally lowered the shotgun and moved to his daughter's side, putting an arm around her shoulder.
Come on back inside, honey. You don't need to be out here right now.
Make him go away, Pa.
Eve allowed him to turn her toward the house.
Make him understand we don't want him here.
After everything that had happened, Morgan would have thought it was impossible for his heart to harden anymore, but at the sound of those anguished words, it did. He felt it happen, the chill stealing over him like frost creeping across the grass on a cold morning.
Eve, I'm sorry.
As father and daughter went inside, Morgan caught up the reins of his horse. He collected the dead man's horse as well, and led them both to the shed. By the time he got there, Marshal Zeke Chambliss arrived to check out the gunshots, accompanied by one of his deputies. The lawman still wore his left arm in a sling, but according to McNally, his injuries were healing well.
What happened here, kid?
Chambliss's deputy stood there in the gathering dusk, looking down at the body of Duke Garrity. Morgan explained about Garrity forcing the shootout. Chambliss scratched his jaw.
That name's familiar. I think I seen a few reward dodgers on him come through town. Didn't put the name together with that fella you ventilated a couple weeks ago, though. This one's a bad hombre. Got 3 or 4 killings to his credit, if I'm remembering right, as well as some holdups.
He was fast. Faster than his brother.
But not fast enough to beat Kid Morgan.
Morgan didn't say anything to that. The body on the ground spoke for itself. But it didn't say as much as Eve had before her father took her in the house. McNally came back out a short time later while Morgan was tending to the buckskin, giving the horse some grain and water. He had already unsaddled the buckskin and rubbed him down. Chambliss's deputy had led Duke Garrity's horse up the street to the livery stable, where it would be cared for the time being. Garrity's body had been loaded into the back of the undertaker's wagon and carted off as well. The doctor didn't have his shotgun with him this time. He stopped in front of the shed and jammed his hands in his pockets. Even in the gloom, now that the sun was down, Morgan could see the unhappy expression on McNally's weathered face.
I'm sorry about what happened, son. I've been afraid that Eve was building up to something like that ever since that other night.
The night I saved her from those hard cases, you mean?
I don't think for a second that we're not grateful to you. Eve and me both. She was scared to death that night, especially when the shooting started, and she was mostly scared for you, I think. Her gratitude was real. But so is what she felt when she found out that you're a gunfighter.
What's that got to do with anything?
You know, my son Joe died a couple of years ago.
Of course. I'm sorry.
My wife's never recovered from what happened to that boy. You know that. You've seen it for yourself.
I'm sorry about that, too.
But, in her own way, Eve's never recovered either. She worked so hard helping me and taking care of her mother so that she's too busy to think about what happened. Well, that's what I believe, anyway.
I mean, no offense, Doctor, but what did happen?
McNally looked squarely at Morgan.
My boy was killed in a fight. A gunfight.
A sort of understanding dawned inside Morgan. He couldn't have picked a worse identity to assume, as far as Eve was concerned, than that of a gunfighter. Having him around reminded her too much of what had happened to her brother.
The thing of it is, Joe wasn't even involved in the trouble. He was just walking down the street in Sacramento, and two men arguing about which one was faster on the draw decided to pull their guns and start blazing away at each other. They were both fatally wounded, but as one of them went down, he fired a final shot that missed the other man and hit Joe instead. Joe never had a chance to make it to cover when the shooting started. The bullet hit him in the head. Killed him instantly, I expect. Like a bolt out of the blue.
I'm sorry. No offense, Doctor, but that didn't have anything to do with me.
Maybe not. But in Eve's mind, you're the same sort of man as the ones who killed her brother and caused her mother to be, well, to be the way she is. You can't expect her to forget. She sees too many reminders of what happened every day. I think she was afraid from the start that you'd turn out to be a gunman. It wasn't until she heard, though, that you're this notorious Kid Morgan that it got to be too much for her.
Morgan felt a strong impulse to tell the doctor that it was all a lie, that he wasn't really a gunfighter, just a businessman from back east named Conrad Browning. He wanted to tell Eve so that she would see that she was wrong about him. And yet, doing that had the potential to ruin his plan. He wasn't even sure that it was true anymore, either. Conrad Browning had killed the Winchell brothers, and maybe there had still been a little of Conrad left the night he faced down Garrity and Jessup. But Conrad couldn't have killed Duke Garrity. The man was too slick with a gun for Conrad. It had taken Kid Morgan to do that. He knew it was too late for him to change the path that he had chosen, or the path that had chosen him, some might say.
I reckon the best thing for me to do is leave.
I won't turn out an injured man. Never have and never will.
I'm all right, Doctor. Maybe not at full strength yet. Maybe that wound hasn't completely healed, but I'm strong enough to travel.
You know that a wound like that would put most men flat on their backs for at least a month. It hasn't even been 3 weeks.
Long enough is long enough.
But where will you go?
Morgan peered off into the night.
Like I've told you, I have business to tend to. I don't know exactly where it'll take me.
Well, at least wait until morning to leave. You can't ride off at night like this.
I reckon I can do that. I'll try to stay out of Eve's way while I'm still here. I don't want to upset her any more than I already have.
McNally put a hand on Morgan's shoulder and squeezed.
You couldn't have known.
But he should have, Morgan thought. After all, didn't gunfighters always carry death and suffering with them wherever they roamed? Eve had gone to her room when she went inside the house, so Morgan didn't see her again that night. He slept fitfully and woke early. He thought it might be a good idea to get the buckskin ready to ride and leave before Eve had a chance to see him and get upset again. She was in the kitchen when he walked in, though, already preparing breakfast, even though dawn was still at least an hour away.
Good morning.
Without looking up at him, she put a pan of biscuits onto the stove.
Pa tells me you're leaving today.
That's right. I reckon it's time.
I hope you'll take care of yourself.
I'll try.
If she wanted to act like her outburst the night before hadn't happened, that was all right with him. He wasn't comfortable talking about anybody's feelings. He never had been, even before the tragedy that had befallen him. She handed him the coffee, still not meeting his eyes. Morgan sat down at the table to sip on the steaming brew while she went on getting ready for breakfast.
Where will you go?
I don't know yet.
That was true. He would have to pick up the trail of Laswell and the other kidnappers, but he wasn't quite sure how to go about that. Frank would have known, he thought, and that reminded him that he'd never had a chance to send a telegram to Claudius Turnbuckle in San Francisco explaining the situation. It was possible that Frank had heard by now about what had happened in Carson City. He might believe that his son was dead. The kid hated that idea, but there was nothing he could do about it right now. Sawtooth didn't have a telegraph office, and he didn't know how long it would be before he came across one. Dr. McNally came bustling into the kitchen and stopped short, seemingly a little surprised to see Morgan there.
Good morning.
Dr. McNally then went over to kiss Eve on the cheek.
Your mother's still sleeping soundly.
That's good.
Eve turned and brought a plate of biscuits and bacon over to the table and set it in front of Morgan. Now the doctor understood. She was trying to get him out of here, and she thought the sooner she fed him, the sooner he would be gone. The back door opened while Morgan and the doctor were eating. Philip Bearpaw came in, his Sharps rifle tucked under his arm.
Good morning, all.
He looked at Morgan.
You're up early, my friend.
I'm riding on today.
So soon? I thought you'd be around for a while yet.
No, it's time for me to move on.
Morgan glanced toward the stove. Eve stood there with her back toward him, but he could tell that she had stiffened as the conversation went on. He hoped Bearpaw wouldn't press him for details about why he was leaving now. With the easy familiarity of a frequent visitor to the house, the Paiute poured himself a cup of coffee and then sat down at the table with Morgan and McNally. He looked like he was thinking something over.
How would you like to have some company, kid?
You want to go with me?
I thought I might.
Bearpaw looked over at McNally.
I'll miss you and your family, Patrick, but it's not like I'd be gone forever.
Well, what you do is your own business, Philip. We'd miss you, of course, but you do whatever you think is best.
Bearpaw looked at Morgan again.
How about it, kid?
Morgan figured he had a pretty good idea what Bearpaw was thinking. Bearpaw thought Morgan wasn't ready to face down Laswell and the others yet, and the Paiute was probably right about that. He wanted to keep on working with Morgan while they hunted down the kidnappers. That wasn't a bad idea, Morgan realized. Bearpaw knew a lot more about surviving on the frontier than he did. Although Morgan thought he was learning fairly rapidly, Bearpaw might be a big help in getting on the trail of his quarry, too, Morgan told himself. He wasn't even sure where to start, but he was willing to bet that Bearpaw would have some ideas. One thing was certain, though. When it came time to face his enemies, Morgan intended to do that alone. He wasn't going to put Bearpaw in danger, although he had a hunch the Paiute would have been willing to back him up, no matter what the play. They could hash that out later. For now, Morgan nodded.
I think I'd like that.
Eve turned and stalked out of the kitchen.
Uh-oh. Why is she so upset this morning?
A man named Duke Garrity was waiting for me under the trees out back when I rode in yesterday evening.
Garrity? Related to that fellow from a couple of weeks ago?
His brother.
I take it there was gunplay?
They're supposed to bury Garrity this morning.
How fast was he?
Pretty fast. Marshal Chambliss said that this Garrity had killed several men.
I guess all that practice down at Phillips' cabin has paid off, kid.
Morgan and Bearpaw both glanced at him in surprise.
Do you think I didn't know what was going on? I have two eyes, and I'm pretty good at figuring things out. I know you've been working with the kid here, Philip. How's he doing?
Pretty good. Good enough so that he's still alive this morning.
But you don't think he's ready to go after the men he's looking for, especially not alone.
Bearpaw shrugged. McNally looked at Morgan.
Are they the ones who shot you, kid?
They did a lot worse than that. It's not anything I want to go into right now.
I suppose I can respect that. I think I can talk Eve into fixing up some supplies for the two of you.
We'd appreciate that, Patrick. Living off the fat of the land isn't as easy as it used to be when my ancestors roamed this land and game was abundant. I'll go get my gear together, and I'll be back here ready to ride in an hour, kid. That be all right?
Sure. I'll be ready, too.
It wouldn't take him long to get his things together, he thought. He didn't have all that much. The clothes on his back, and his guns. Couldn't forget the guns. When it came time to ride away, Eve surprised Morgan by coming out of the house and putting her arms around him.
Take care of yourself, Mr. Morgan. I'd hate for anything bad to happen to you.
Thanks, Eve. And thank you for everything you did to help me when I was hurt.
She stepped back and looked down at the ground.
I would have done as much for any of Pa's patients.
Somehow, Morgan didn't believe that. Even though a large part of him didn't want to admit it, he knew there had been a connection between the two of them that went beyond that of nurse and patient. If things had been different, if they had met at another place, in another time... He shoved those thoughts out of his brain. They had no place in his head, not now, not ever. Eve turned to Bearpaw and hugged him as well.
Oh, will you be careful too?
Oh, I intend to.
And come back soon.
Dr. McNally and his wife came out of the house then, the doctor keeping a hand protectively on her arm. He offered his other hand to Morgan.
We'll be keeping you in our thoughts and prayers, son.
Thanks. I reckon I can use them.
Mrs. McNally turned to her husband.
Patrick, why is Joseph leaving again? He just got home.
McNally opened his mouth to try to explain, but before he could say anything, an impulse seized Morgan. He gave in to it, taking his hat off and stepping forward to put his arms around Mrs. McNally. He gave her a firm but gentle hug.
Don't worry about me, Ma. I'll be back soon.
She patted him on the back and then reached up to stroke his sandy hair, which had gotten fairly long.
Oh, Joseph, I'll miss you so much. I'll be waiting for you. I love you.
I love you too, Ma. Listen, I really don't want you worrying about me. You don't need to sit around all day waiting for me to get back either. You just go on living. Take care of Pa and Eve and yourself, and I'll see you when I see you. All right?
She looked up at him and nodded as he used his thumb to wipe a tear away from her cheek.
All right. If you say so, Joseph, that's what I'll do.
He nodded, stepped back, and put his hat on his head again.
So long, everybody.
Morgan took hold of the buckskin's reins.
Goodbye, son.
Tears glistened in his eyes, and in Eve's as well.
Take care.
Morgan and Bearpaw swung up into their saddles. As they started to turn their horses, Eve stepped forward and put a hand on Morgan's leg. She looked up at him and mouthed the words, "Thank you." Morgan nodded, then heeled the buckskin into a trot as Eve stepped back. Bearpaw rode alongside him on the Appaloosa.
That was a mighty nice thing you did back there for those folks.
No more than they deserve. It was the least I could do.
The two men fell silent as they rode south, putting the settlement of Sawtooth behind them.
How do you plan to go about finding these men you're looking for, kid?
Tell you the truth, I don't know. I was hoping maybe you'd have some ideas.
It's a good thing I decided to come along then. You said you know all their names?
That's right. At least, I know the names they were going by a few weeks ago. Some of them may be aliases.
This may come as a shock to you, since you know me only as the educated, cultured individual that I am now. But there was a time when I... How should I put this? Rode some rather dark and lonely trails.
You were an outlaw?
Not to the extent that Laswell and those others are. But from time to time, some cattle or horses that didn't exactly belong to me may have wound up in my possession. As a result of that time in my life, I know some of the places frequented by men who have heard the owl hoot. We can start by asking questions in those places. We'll have to be careful how we go about it, though. We don't want it to get back to the men we're looking for that someone's on their trail.
I'll follow your lead.
In that case, I think we should circle around Carson City.
That sounds good to me.
And head for a trading post I know down where Nevada, Arizona, and Utah come together. Chances are the members of that gang scattered after what happened rather than staying together. From what you told me, they didn't all ride together on a regular basis, but came together more for that one job.
It caused a twinge deep in the kid's chest to hear Bearpaw talking so matter-of-factly about rebels kidnapping and murder, but he told himself that it was how it had to be, not only for the Paiute, but for him too. He couldn't allow his emotions to rule him. He remembered a quote from Shakespeare, he thought, about revenge being a dish best served cold. Giving in to hot-blooded rage could lead a man into making mistakes, and those mistakes could doom his entire effort.
Some of them may have headed for Mexico, and they may have stopped at this place I'm thinking of. If we can track down one or two of them, maybe they can tell us where to find some of the others.
So you're saying we'll find two or three of them at a time?
That's our best bet. The whole bunch isn't going to fall right in your lap, kid.
The problem will be convincing the ones we do find to tell us where to look for the others.
Oh, there are ways to persuade people to talk. I am one of those dirty, torturing redskins, after all.
At least you didn't say heap and ugh this time.
As Bearpaw suggested, they circled wide around Carson City and then headed southeast, keeping the various mountain ranges that ran along the Nevada-California border on their right hand. The Great Basin, broken up by a few smaller ranges, stretched out seemingly endlessly to their left. A couple of days into the journey, Morgan gazed off to the west and knew that the mining town of Buckskin lay in that direction. Conrad and Rebel had visited there while Frank Morgan was the marshal, and the Crown Royal Mine, owned by the Browning Mining Syndicate, still operated near Buckskin, although its output of silver ore had begun to dwindle, the kid recalled. All that was part of another life, he told himself. Someone else's life. He turned his face forward again and concentrated on the trail in front of him. Bearpaw called a halt early enough every day so that they could make camp and then Morgan could practice with his gun for an hour or so. The muscles in his arm had strengthened so that drawing and firing the Colt time and time again no longer wore them out. Whenever he washed up in the icy streams that flowed down out of the mountains, he checked the scar on his side where the bullet had torn out a large chunk of flesh. The red puckered scar was ugly, but the wound had healed cleanly and Morgan wasn't worried about it anymore. From time to time it ached a little, but nothing he couldn't handle. Dr. McNally had done a fine job of patching him up. Dr. McNally and Eve. It took the two men a week to reach their destination, a week of riding through starkly beautiful, sparsely populated country. Arid desert flats, alternated with ruggy, rocky mountain ranges and the occasional grass valley. Isolated ranches were located in those valleys. Bearpaw pointed out some of the squat adobe ranch houses.
20 years ago, those folks had to worry all the time about my people or the Apaches attacking them and wiping them out. Now the Paiutes have made some peace, and so have most of the Apaches. A few bands of renegades left have moved across the border into Mexico and never raid this far north anymore.
Is that why you don't mind us having a campfire at night?
That's right. It wasn't all that long ago that being so careless may have cost you your life. Now the main thing the ranchers have to worry about is their herds dying of thirst. Same thing is true for pilgrims like us. You need to know where the water holes are when you travel through this part of the country. Lucky for you that I'm with you. I know where every spring is.
Is there anything you don't know?
Not much. And if I don't know it, I'll probably lie and say that I do.
Now you tell me how unreliable you are.
Late in the afternoon, they came to a place where two trails crossed. Several buildings were scattered around, the largest of them built partially of logs and partially of adobe. A log porch ran along the front of it. A latticework roof attached to the vigas that stuck out from the top of the wall provided shade. About a dozen horses were tied up at the hitch rails in front of the place. The other buildings were adobe shacks.
A German named Immelmann owns the trading post. The Mormons used to have a settlement here 30 or 40 years ago. They abandoned it, though, and all the buildings fell into ruin except that one. It was in pretty bad shape, but still standing when Immelmann came along and fixed it up. A few wagon trains used to pass through, but those days are pretty well over. Now most of his business comes from men like the ones we're looking for.
Outlaws.
Men who don't want to be found, for one reason or another. After Immelmann got the trading post going, a few other folks moved in. They've started calling the place Las Vegas. Some of them think there'll be a regular town here one of these days, but I doubt it. If Immelmann ever dies or leaves, the settlement will dry up and blow away without the trading post to keep it going.
Morgan didn't doubt that. He didn't care about the future of Las Vegas, though. Only the present. And then only if he and Bearpaw could find a clue here to the men they were looking for. They added their horses to the ones tied up at the hitch rails and stepped onto the porch. The shade, even though it was dappled by the sun coming through the latticework, was a welcome relief from the heat. Morgan thought it was considerably cooler on the porch. The front and back doors stood open to let any stray breezes blow through the building. As Morgan and Bearpaw headed for the front door, three men started through it from the inside on their way out. The men stopped short as they saw the two newcomers.
Oh no, Injun.
You ain't going in there where white men are drinking and playing cards.
The Paiute looked down at the porch and shuffled his high-topped moccasins.
Bearpaw heap sorry. Injun mighty thirsty. Not cause trouble.
Morgan forced himself not to stare in disgust.
The last thing a filthy old redskin like you needs is fire water.
You'll get a snootful and you're liable to go on the warpath. Where will us poor white folks be then? You'll probably scalp us all.
Let us by. We're not looking for trouble.
You traveling with this redskin, mister? Hell, ain't you got no pride? Ain't you got nothing better to do than hang around with a savage?
Morgan thought about all the times Bearpaw had quoted Milton and Shakespeare and John Donne from memory for hours at a time. Chances were, the Paiute knew more poetry by heart than these three louts had read in their entire lives combined. But that wasn't the sort of thing that Kid Morgan would be thinking about, he reminded himself. Instead, he forced himself to stoop to their level.
Don't you worry. I'll keep an eye on the redskin. I won't let him get into the whiskey, just regular water.
That's fine as far as it goes. But what about the stink?
Oh, I reckon he can put up with it. It ought to fade after a while anyway, since you fellas are leaving.
Bearpaw turned his head slowly and stared at Morgan. He didn't know where the words had come from. Just a few seconds earlier, he'd been trying to be conciliatory. But then something had snapped inside him. He was tired of everybody's bullshit. Right now, Philip Bearpaw was the best friend he'd had in the world, and he was damned if he was going to let these sorry-ass bastards talk about his friend that way. The three men weren't quite as quick on the uptake as Bearpaw was, but it didn't take them long.
Hey! He's saying we stink worse than Injun!
You got a big mouth, boy.
You can try to close it if you want.
Something about his stance and his cold, level eyes must have warned the men. None of them made a move toward a gun. But their leader, who was also the biggest of the trio, faced Morgan.
You need a lesson in manners, you son of a bitch! And I'm just the man to give it to you!
He lunged across the porch and swung a mallet-like fist at Morgan's head. Morgan's swift move made the man's fist miss. As the man stumbled forward, off balance, Morgan grabbed the front of his shirt and heaved as he turned. The man flew past him and sailed off the shallow porch to go rolling and sprawling in the dust.
Hey!
Donkey Laugh charged. Morgan met the attack by stepping in and hooking a hard left into the man's belly. Donkey Laugh doubled over as the blow knocked the wind out of him. Morgan grabbed the back of his head and shoved it down as he brought his knee up. His knee cracked into Donkey Laugh's jaw with stunning force. As the man crumpled, Morgan thought that he wouldn't be letting loose with any more of those braying laughs for a while. Not with a jaw that was either broken or was going to be pretty sore for a while at the very least. That left the third man, but as Morgan turned toward him, he saw that the hombre was backing away, hands held at shoulder level.
Well, take it easy, amigo. This ain't my fight. I know I stink.
A few feet away on the porch, Bearpaw suddenly lifted his sharps and eared back the hammer. The kid looked over his shoulder and saw that the first man was on his feet again. His hair and face and clothes were covered with dust. So was the hand that had started to reach for the gun on his hip. That hand had frozen where it was as the man found himself staring down the ominously large barrel of the sharps.
They say discretion is the better part of valor, my friend. You'd be wise to heed that advice.
The man gaped at Bearpaw.
What the hell?
But he slowly moved his hand away from the butt of his gun.
I told you we weren't looking for trouble. We still aren't. Why don't the two of you pick up your friend and head on to wherever you were going when you stopped to harass us?
You're lucky you got that redskin watching your back, mister. I was about to blow a hole in you.
You were about to try. The way I see it, I just saved your life. You were gonna draw on Kid Morgan.
Who?
Kid Morgan. The man who killed the Winchell brothers and Duke Garrity, not to mention Garrity's little brother and a man called Jessup.
Say, I've heard of Duke Garrity. He's pretty fast.
Was pretty fast.
Morgan saw the nervousness in the first man's eyes now. He was starting to realize that he might have bitten off too big a chunk.
Look, kid, let's just let this go, all right?
Fine by me.
The man motioned to his companion, and together they picked up the half-conscious Donkey Laugh, and they helped him to his horse. They got him into the saddle, and then mounted up themselves. Flanking their injured pard, they rode off. Morgan and Bearpaw watched them go, just to make sure the men didn't try to double back and attack again.
What is los? What is this disturbance on my porch?
They turned to see a tall, gaunt man with a white spade beard standing in the doorway. The man's lean, leathery face creased in a sudden grin as he recognized the Paiute.
Bearpaw, I thought I recognized your voice. If you had started spouting poetry, I would have known for sure, yeah?
Bearpaw shook hands with the man.
It's good to see you too, you old Dutchman. How long has it been, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, about that. Who is your friend?
This is Kid Morgan.
Guten Tag, Herr Immelmann.
Ah, sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Ein bisschen.
Morgan hoped he hadn't made a mistake by greeting the trading post proprietor in German. He had about exhausted his knowledge of the language when he told Immelmann he spoke only a little.
Come in, come in.
Immelmann waved a knobby-knuckled hand toward the retreating riders.
Oh, don't worry about those three. They think they are tough hombres, but they are not.
Morgan and Bearpaw stepped into the trading post, which was even cooler because of its thick log and adobe walls. The German went on.
You must tell me what brings you here, if such a question will not be considered impolite.
Things got a mite too warm for us where we were.
The more things change, the more they stay the same, eh, my old friend? Come, the beer is cold and the women are warm. What more does a man need?
Vengeance, the kid thought. That was what some men needed, and he was one of them. Immelmann had a Mexican bartender working for him, so he was able to sit with Morgan and Bearpaw at a round table in the rear of the big, shadowy barroom half of the trading post instead of serving drinks. The three men nursed beers. Bearpaw explained to Morgan that while he couldn't handle whiskey, like most of his people, beer never muddled his mind.
The two of you are on the dodge, yeah?
Not exactly. I don't think there's any paper out on us, so you don't have to worry about any bounty hunters showing up looking for us. We'd just as soon avoid any lawmen, though, just to be on the safe side.
I understand.
The German thought he understood anyway, the kid mused. That was what he and Bearpaw wanted.
Have you seen an hombre called Moss pass through these parts lately? We heard that he's looking for some men for some sort of job up north, and we thought we might try to sign on with him.
He and Morgan had decided that that would be a safe enough question to ask, grounded in truth as it was.
Do you mean Vernon Moss?
Yeah, that's the fellow's name.
Have you not heard what happened to him?
Bearpaw leaned forward.
No. He gets shot up or something?
Both of his legs were crushed in an accident. I'm told that he will be a cripple for the rest of his life. And this happened while he and some other men were engaged in that job you mentioned.
You mean we missed out on it?
You would not have wanted to be part of this, old friend. It was an ugly business. Nothing like rustling or stealing horses. Moss and some other men kidnapped a woman.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It was even worse than you think. They held the woman for ransom, and even though her husband agreed to pay, they murdered the poor woman. Clay Laswell shot her. Do you know Laswell?
Bearpaw shook his head. Across the table, the kid kept a stony expression on his face, but it took an effort to do so.
I thought better of Laswell, to tell you the truth. He has killed a number of men in gunfights, true, and I suspect he may have shot a few in the back from long range while he was working as a regulator in Wyoming. But I would not have guessed that he would murder a woman in cold blood. I suppose as we get older and more tired, the list of things we will not do for money grows shorter and shorter.
How do you know about all this?
Julio Esquivel told me. You remember Julio? Short, has a beard, very good with a knife.
I don't think I ever crossed his trail. How about you, kid?
Nope.
Well, Julio stopped here about a week ago with a couple of other men. One of them was a huge brute who treated one of my whores badly. I was glad to see them go.
Morgan remembered Esquivel and the big moon-faced man from that awful night.
Who was the third man?
I hadn't seen him before. They called him Buck.
So, Buck, Esquivel, and the giant Carlson had ridden through here a week earlier, Morgan thought.
Did they say where they were headed?
Immelmann frowned, and the kid saw a warning look flash in Bearpaw's dark eyes. He might have pushed things too far by asking such a direct question. But after a moment, Immelmann shrugged.
I might not tell you if that monster had not been so rough on my girl, but when they left here, they were riding east. I heard them say something about going over to the Four Corners.
We're obliged.
Immelmann looked back and forth between Morgan and the Paiute.
You had no interest in joining up with Moss. You're looking for him and the men who rode with him on that job.
You and I go way back, my friend. I know we can count on your discretion.
You used me. Played on our friendship.
As you said, those men did a very bad thing.
I think perhaps you two are the bounty hunters now. Such men are not welcome at my trading post.
I'm sorry you feel that way. But you won't mention to anybody that we were here, will you?
Doing so might make people suspect that I gave you information. I will say nothing. But I would ask you to leave now.
Morgan and Bearpaw rose to their feet.
For what it's worth, if anything, there's no blood money involved in this hunt, Immelmann. It's personal.
I don't wish to hear any more. Anyway, any time you set out to kill a man, it is personal, is it not? How can it be any other way when you end another life and risk your own?
Those were good questions, the kid thought. And from the way Immelmann was looking at him, he wondered just what the German was thinking. He would have been willing to bet, though, that Immelmann didn't suspect Conrad Browning and Kid Morgan were one and the same. Bearpaw and Morgan rode away from the trading post a short time later.
Sorry. I know I pushed too hard back there. Should have waited and let you get the information out of him at your own pace.
Doesn't matter. We found out what we needed to know.
Can we trust Immelmann?
Maybe. I think so. Like he said, he can't tell anybody too much about us without making them suspect that he gave us the information we were looking for. He's better off keeping his mouth shut, like he would have if it had been anybody but me asking. He owed me a favor.
Now I've ruined your friendship.
Justice doesn't come without a price.
This isn't your fight, you know.
Maybe it didn't start out that way, but after everything you did for the McNallys, and the way you stood up for me back there, I reckon I've made it my fight.
What's the Four Corners?
That's the area where Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico all come together. Some of the most desolate country you'll ever see. A fitting place for the sort of men we're after.
Got some ground to make up on them.
Yep.
Morgan heeled the buckskin into a faster pace. Bearpaw followed suit, and soon the trading post at Las Vegas fell far behind. Bearpaw had warned him that they were heading into some desolate country, and the Paiute was right. As they traveled almost due east over the next 2 weeks, Morgan didn't know if they were in northern Arizona or southern Utah. It didn't really matter, Bearpaw told him. One was just about as ugly as the other, seemingly never-ending wastelands of dirt, sand, and rock. And yet, here and there, great beauty existed, such as the long line of sandstone cliffs that shone a brilliant red in the sunlight. Wherever there was water, grass grew and flowers bloomed, little bits of paradise among the desert vastness. They came to such an oasis a couple of days after leaving Las Vegas, late in the afternoon, and when Morgan spotted an adobe ranch house among the cottonwoods that lined a small creek, he was eager to ride on in and find out if the people who lived on this isolated ranch had seen the three men they were after. But as Morgan lifted the reins and started to heel his horse into a trot, Bearpaw reached over and grasped his arm, stopping him.
Take it easy, kid. Something's wrong up there.
What do you mean?
Suddenly, black shapes circling in the sky caught his eye, and he answered his own question.
Damn, those are vultures, aren't they?
Buzzards, some call them. They're bad news, regardless of the name.
Bearpaw pulled the sharps from the saddle sheath in which he carried it.
Unlimber that Winchester of yours. We'll ride in, but we're going to be careful about it. Slow and easy.
That was how they approached the ranch, which consisted of the adobe house, an adobe barn, and a pole corral. The lack of a bunkhouse meant the family that owned this place worked it by themselves, without any hired hands. As Morgan and Bearpaw drew closer, Morgan expected at least one dog to come running out to meet them, barking its head off. Instead, an ominous silence hung over the sun-blasted day.
If this is 20 years ago, I'd say the Apaches had been here. I don't know what to make of this yet, except that it can't be good.
The kid spotted a dark shape on the ground inside the corral.
Is that a horse?
Morgan pointed toward it with the barrel of his Winchester.
No. Milk cow, more than likely. Another bad sign.
Bad how?
A ranch with a milk cow usually has kids around.
Morgan grimaced. He hadn't thought about that.
Look at the door.
Bearpaw's face looked like it had been carved out of the same red sandstone that had formed those cliffs a ways back. Morgan saw the body lying across the threshold of the ranch house door. The man lay face down, a large black stain on the back of his shirt. That stain shifted as the riders drew closer. His stomach twisted in sick revulsion.
Those are flies.
That's right. They're after the blood on that man's shirt. Quite a feast in surroundings like this.
Another huddled shape between the house and the barn turned out to be the family dog. Morgan averted his eyes, thinking of the big cur that traveled with his father. He had a soft spot for dogs. He was sure he and Rebel would have gotten one sooner or later if... Those thoughts wouldn't do any good. The kid forced them out of his head.
So we've got a man, a dog, and a cow. Where's everyone else?
Inside, I suppose.
Bearpaw and Morgan rein to a stop in front of the house.
Why don't you stay out here, kid? I'll have a look.
I can stand it. I've already seen things worse than any man should ever have to see.
I reckon you have at that. Come on, then. Make it short.
Both men dismounted, holding their rifles at the ready. In the unlikely event that any danger still lurked inside the ranch house, they stepped over the body of the man who sprawled in the doorway. Morgan felt sick as he heard flies buzzing around. It took a moment for his eyes to adjust to the dimness inside the house, and when they did, he almost wished that they hadn't. A boy, about 8 or 9, lay on his back on the hard-packed dirt floor, staring sightlessly at the ceiling. He appeared to have been shot once in the chest. The flies had been at him, too.
Babies over there in the crib.
Bearpaw gestured toward a little bed on curved rockers that sat in one corner.
Don't look, kid.
This time, Morgan followed the advice.
Where's the mother?
Bearpaw nodded toward a doorway leading into another room.
She'll be in there, I expect. That's probably the bedroom.
He was right on both counts. The woman lay naked on the bed, arms and legs spraddled out, the sheets around her head dark with dried blood from the hideous wound in her neck. Someone had cut her throat almost from ear to ear.
Escoval.
That Mexican traveling with Buck and Carlson?
He cut Edwin Sinclair's throat the same way.
I don't see how you could really tell something like that, but I'm sure you're right, kid.
Bearpaw stepped over to the bed and reached down to close the woman's staring eyes. She had been pretty, with short blonde hair that curled around her head until her face had frozen in lines of agony and torment. Bearpaw jerked his head toward the door.
I need some air.
Morgan knew just what the Paiute meant. He felt the same way himself. They had to step over the dead man in the doorway again, but once they did, they were back in the open air, with the hot sun blazing down on them.
Maybe we can find a shovel around the place so we can bury them.
Yeah, there's bound to be one. Come on. I want to have a look at the corral.
The Paiute opened the gate and walked into the corral, circling around the bloated corpse of the milk cow. Numerous piles of horse droppings littered the dirt. Bearpaw hunkered on his heels next to one of them and studied it for a moment, then reached out to pick up some of it and rub it between his fingers.
This isn't more than 7 or 8 hours old.
What does that mean?
Those three left Immelman's place a week ahead of us. Even given the fact that we've been pushing our horses and they probably weren't, they must have arrived here at least 4 days ago. And they only left this morning.
I still don't understand.
Squinting against the sun, Bearpaw nodded toward the ranch house.
The man's been dead the longest. 3 days, maybe a little more. But the woman and the kids were killed a lot later. Maybe as late as this morning.
Morgan tried to figure out what that meant. And as he did so, he felt horror growing inside him.
Those three were after rode in here, and the family offered them food and water for their horses and a place to spend the night.
Yes. Then they got up the next morning and murdered the man. They probably told the woman that if she cooperated, they would spare her and the children. She had to know that was unlikely. But she had to try and save her kids any way she could. So she went along with whatever they wanted.
Morgan knew that Buck, Carlson, and Esquivel must have put that poor woman through 3 days of hell and degradation. They had assaulted her in her own bed, again and again, with her children in the next room and her husband's body lying only yards away. And then, when the bastards were tired of their sport, they had brutally slaughtered all three members of the family and ridden away, as if the whole blood-drenched business meant nothing. Morgan hoped that Esquivel had slashed the woman's throat before her children were killed, so she hadn't had to hear the shots that ended their lives. But he wouldn't have wanted to bet on that. That would have been one last bit of torture to end things on. He forced his mind to more practical considerations.
They're less than a day ahead of us now. If we push on, we'll be able to catch up to them tomorrow for sure.
Bearpaw came out of the corral and closed the gate behind him, even though there was nothing alive in there to get out.
What about the burying?
If we do that, it's going to be so late that we can't push on today. I'll have to wait until tomorrow.
A part of Morgan didn't want to accept any delay. The need for vengeance was stronger than ever in him after seeing what had happened here. But he knew he couldn't just ride away and leave these poor people as bait for the scavengers.
We'll bury them. We'll let our horses get a little extra rest while we're doing it. Because tomorrow, we're going to ride like hell.